Welcome to the Laura's House podcast series. In this installment of our series, we'll be speaking with Hamali Shah, a legal advocate here at Laura's House, about parent alienation syndrome. Thank you for speaking with us today, Hamali.
It's my pleasure.
I'd first like to start off by having you share some background and explain to our listeners what Laura's House is.
Laura's House is a community-based nonprofit organization that empowers individuals and families to lead violence-free lives. We offer a comprehensive range of services, including safe refuge for women and children escaping violent homes. We also offer legal support services, counseling, community education, and prevention workshops for teens on healthy relationships and dating violence. The inception of Laura's House was inspired by a true story about a woman called Laura from Orange County who was a victim of domestic violence. Unfortunately, the end of her particular story is a very tragic one. Her life was cut short with her untimely death at age 38. Since 1994, Laura's House has continued to grow and offer a multitude of programs and services which provide vital support and education aimed at avoiding such tragic circumstances from ever occurring again. Our mission is to change the social beliefs, attitudes, and behaviors that perpetuate domestic violence while creating a safe space in which to empower individuals and families affected by abuse.
Hamali, can you define what parent alienation syndrome is?
Sure. The term parent alienation syndrome was coined by a child psychiatrist, Richard Gardner, in 1985 to describe cases that he believed involved false allegations of child sexual abuse. Simply stated, Dr. Gardner viewed these claims by the child as being integral to that child's campaign to disparage the non-custodial parent, typically the father, as part of the brainwashing tactics employed by the mother to turn the child against the father. Dr. Gardner's definition of parental alienation syndrome, or PAS, is that it's a disorder that arises primarily in the context of child custody disputes. Its primary manifestation is the child's campaign of denigration against a parent, a campaign that has no justification. It results from the combination of a programming or brainwashing of a parent's indoctrinations and the child's own contributions to the vilification of the targeted parent.
Why is parent alienation syndrome so detrimental to women and children who are trying to rebuild their lives after fleeing abusive homes?
Recent studies published by noted family law experts Carol Brech, who's a distinguished professor emerita and research professor in family law at UC Davis, and Andre L. Brown, who's an assistant professor at Lewis and Clark College, point to the lack of scientific foundation for parent alienation syndrome. Professor Brown, in a 2008 report published in the Journal of Women and Social Work, asserts that this claim of parent alienation syndrome has represented the extreme collusion of male entitlement, the mental health profession, and family courts, and has been used to prevent battered women from protecting their children from exposure to violent and abusive fathers.
How often do researchers say parent alienation syndrome occurs?
Professor Birch, in a 2002 article written for the Child and Family Law Quarterly, cites early reports by Dr. Gardner indicating that PAS was present in approximately 90% of the children whose families were involved in custody litigation, but goes on to report that he had no research findings to substantiate these assertions. Professor Birch stated in her report that in recent years, PAS has been extended to include cases of all types where the child refuses to visit the non-custodial parent, regardless of whether or not the child's objections entail abuse allegations. Despite the use of the term parent alienation syndrome by forensic psychologists, parent coordinators, and lawyers, there is no consistent or empirical or clinical evidence that PAS exists. Furthermore, it is not recognized by any medical or psychological diagnostic bodies. Professor Brown, in her 2008 article, also cites that there are no indications that the alienator's behavior is the actual cause of the child's behavior towards the target parent.
In what types of settings do researchers believe parent alienation syndrome most often occurs?
In a 1992 report entitled Dividing the Child, Social and Legal Dilemma of Custody, researchers Eleanor McCoby and Robert Mokin cite approximately 25% of families experience substantial legal conflict, and it is in these families where the parents, the fathers in particular, harbor especially high levels of hostility towards the former spouse. As such, according to Professor Birch in her 2002 report, high conflict families are disproportionately represented and among the population of those contesting custody and visitation. And these cases most commonly involve domestic violence, child abuse, and substance abuse.
What are some of the problems with the parent alienation syndrome theory?
Professor Birch, in her 2002 report for the Child and Family Law Quarterly, states five flaws in its theory. Number one, it fails to recognize parents and children's angry, often inappropriate, and totally predictable behavior towards following separation. Number two, the vastly overstated frequency of cases in which children and custodial parents manufacture false allegations or collude to destroy the parent-child relationship. Number three, it shifts attention away from the perhaps dangerous behavior of the parent seeking custody to that of the non-custodial parent. This person, who may be attempting to protect the child, is instead presumed to be lying and poisoning the child. Number four, concern that, particularly in serious cases, the relationship of an alienated child with a rejected parent will be irreparably damaged unless drastic measures such as custody transfer, isolation from the left parent, and deprogramming are taken. In all but unusual cases, these issues resolve themselves as the child matures. And number five, the remedy for extreme cases, as stated above, is unsupported and endangers children.
In what ways specifically is parent alienation syndrome misused by the court system?
Professor Andre Brown, in her 2008 report published in the Journal of Women and Social Work, discusses the writings of Jennifer Holt, a lawyer and legal scholar who has chronicled the misuse of PAS in the courtroom. Holt's 2006 comprehensive review of PAS revealed that the continued use of PAS in the legal system is not because of a higher incidence of mothers interfering with familial reconciliation. On the contrary, it is purely a legal tactic that attorneys use to win custody for fathers with a documented history of domestic violence and child abuse. The result is that parents who are accused of abusing their children often gain, abusing their children often gain access to them through increased or in some cases sole custody. A May 2008 report by A. Bowen for Women's E-News entitled Abused Women See Danger in Family Court cited that investigation of New York family court systems revealed that family courts re-traumatize battered women by forcing them to confront men they fear and granting custody to abusers 37% of the time, despite the women's roles as primary caregivers. In his 2008 report, Professor Brown also cites a 1999 report by S.J. Dallum entitled Parent Alienation Syndrome, Is It Scientific?, which was published and exposed the failure of family courts to protect children from abuse and custody disputes, published by Our Children Charitable Foundation in Los Gatos, California. In this report, Dallum states that in conforming to Dr. Gardner's PAS paradigm, custody evaluators justify placing the child with the abusive parent, and some courts seem almost eager to punish the so-called alienating parent without regard for the immediate or long-term impact on the child. Essentially, in buying into the theory of parent alienation syndrome, the courts are simply becoming an extension of the abuse that mothers and their children are attempting to flee. The pattern of abuse and coercive control has not changed, only the venue for the behavior.
How does parental alienation syndrome impact abused women going through a divorce or custody case?
Women in these situations are under tremendous stress, particularly if they have come from an abusive relationship. They are impacted by the real threat of losing custody of their children to an abusive partner. They are also under financial stress due to the time that they must take off from work to attend evaluations, depositions, and court hearings. Therapists who are involved in these situations and are either unaware or untrained in dealing with domestic violence situations can mistakenly conclude that the woman is incompetent. This is why it is so crucial for a woman to get support from organizations like Laura's House, where there are trained experts on staff who can validate these experiences and empower women to successfully advocate for themselves in the courtroom. At Laura's House, we've seen situations where the children or child have rejected an abused parent, actually defending the abuser. In addition, abusers will accuse the mom of alienating the children, once again trying to assert power and control over the victim by accusing them of PAS.
What is the economic impact of parent alienation syndrome on women and their children?
The cost can be enormous. Even when you only consider the fees charged by forensic psychologists and other professionals when investigating parent alienation syndrome. Many parents lose their jobs when going through a highly contentious divorce, and money that should be used for child support often goes to pay legal fees, the cost of traveling to court, paying for filings and expert witnesses, not to mention court-ordered therapy.
Has anything been done on a national or state level to ban parent alienation syndrome from the courts?
In 2006, the National Organization of Women denounced PAS and resolved that any professional whose mission involves the protection of the rights of women and children denounced its use as unethical, unconstitutional, and dangerous. The National Council of Juvenile and Family Court Judges also denounced PAS as junk science in 2006. In the state of California, Assembly Bill 612, sponsored by Assembly Member Jim Beal Jr. of San Jose, has moved to outlaw unscientific alienation theories that have fueled bitter and expensive child custody battles. The bill was informally approved by the Assembly Judiciary Committee in April 2009 and then submitted to a formal vote. However, it was withdrawn in July 2009, and there are no further updates on the status of that bill.
What can I do to help stop the perpetuation of parent alienation syndrome in the courts?
You can support organizations and groups in your area who are working to lobby legislative and judicial leaders, both on local and national levels, to ban parent alienation syndrome. The National Council of Juvenile and Family Court Judges Family Violence Department is committed to improving the way the courts, law enforcement agencies, and others respond to family violence, while recognizing the legal, cultural, and psychological dynamics involved, with the ultimate goal of improving the lives of domestic violence victims and their children. For more information, you can visit their website, which is www.ncjfcj.org. Other organizations to contact regarding the banning of PAS include the Center for Judicial Excellence, Child Advocacy Center, the Leadership Council on Child Abuse and Interpersonal Violence, and the California Protective Parents Association.
Where can I learn more about parent alienation syndrome?
There are several websites that offer more information on parent alienation syndrome, including Los Angeles-based Breakthrough Parenting, Inc. For more information, you can go to their website at breakthroughparenting.com/PAS.
As an organization that serves victims of domestic violence and their families, what types of social changes do you advocate to stop the misuse of parent alienation syndromes in the court?
We work to provide legal services to our clients with the help of attorneys that lend their time in pro bono services. The legal department, in collaboration with the Orange County Bar Association, hosts a monthly legal clinic, which is the fourth Tuesday of every month. Clients have an opportunity to speak to an attorney for 30 minutes free of charge. but a prior appointment is required. For more information, you can call us at 949-361-3775 to schedule an appointment for the legal clinic. Laura's House works to empower our clients and inform them of their rights and empower them with the knowledge and resources to move forward to successfully obtain the items necessary to achieve a happy and healthy future.
If I'm a victim of domestic violence in dealing with parent alienation syndrome in the courts, how can I contact Laura's House?
You can log on to our website, which is www.laurashouse.org, and that's LaurasHouse. Or you can call the 24-hour hotline, which is at 949-498-1511. And we also have a toll-free hotline, which is 866-498-1566.
That information was very useful. Thank you so much for joining me, Amali.
No problem. It was my pleasure. Thank you.
That concludes this installment of the Laura's House podcast series.